This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Is it drinking or penny ante? Well, the world passed them by. One woman came, wearing a heavy veil that concealed her face. White and yellow streaks showed in her black dyed hair. The reporter made a mental note, old friend from the old district, but no story there, can't mention that. One by one they filed past the casket, looking into the still face of old Bert Barracoon, who'd been nobody. His stubbly hair was white. His lined face was as empty in death as his life had been, but death had added dignity. One great spray of flowers spread behind the casket. The card read, Senator and Mrs. Ransom Foster. There were no other flowers except, almost unnoticed, a few pale leafless pink and yellow blossoms scattered on the carpeted step. The reporter, squinting, finally identified them. Son of a gun. Blossoms of the prickly pear, cactus flowers, seemed suitable for the old man, flowers that grow on prairie wasteland. Well, they're free if you want to pick 'em, and Barracoon's friends don't look prosperous. But how come the senator sends a bouquet? There was a delay. And the funeral director fidgeted a little, waiting. The reporter sat up straighter when he saw the last two mourners enter. Senator Foster. Sure, there's the crippled arm. And that must be his wife. Congress is still in session. He came all the way from Washington. But why would he bother for an old wreck like Bert Barracoon? After the funeral was decently over, the reporter asked him. The senator almost told the truth, but he caught himself in time. He said Bert Barracoon was my friend for more than 30 years. He could not give the true answer. He was my enemy. He was my conscience. He made me whatever I am. Ransom Foster had been in the territory for several months when he ran into Liberty Valance. He'd been afoot on the prairie for 2 days when he met Bert Barracoon. Up to that time, Ransom Foster had been nobody in particular. A dude from the East, quietly inquisitive, moving from one shack town to another. Just another tenderfoot with his own reasons for being there, and no aim in life at all. When Barracoon found him on the prairie, Foster was indeed a tenderfoot. In his boots there was a warm, damp squigging where his feet had blistered. And the blisters had broken to bleed. He was bruised, sunburned, and filthy. He'd been crawling. But when he saw Barracoon riding toward him, he sat up. He had no horse, no saddle, and by that time, no pride. Barracoon looked down at him, not saying anything. Finally, Ransom Foster asked, Water? Uh, I don't carry any. Barracoon shook his head. But we can go where it is. He stepped down from the saddle, a casual Samaritan, and with one heave pulled Foster upright. Get you in the saddle. Can you stay there? He inquired. If I can't, Foster answered through swollen lips, shoot me. Bert said amiably, all right, and pulled the horse around. By twisting its ear, he held the animal quiet long enough to help the angst stranger to the saddle. Then on foot, and like any cowboy, Bert Barracoon hated walking. He led the horse 5 miles to the river. He let Foster lie where he fell in the cottonwood grove and brought him a hat full of water. After that, Foster made 3 attempts to stand up. After the 3rd failure, Barracoon asked, grinning, want me to shoot you after all? No, Foster answered. There's something I want to do first. Barracoon looked at the bruises and commented, well, I should think so. He got on his horse and rode away. After an hour, he returned with bedding and grub and asked, ain't you dead yet? The bruised and battered man opened his uninjured eye and said, not yet, but soon. Bert was amused. He brought a bucket of water and set up camp, a bedroll on a tarp, an armload of wood for a fire. He crouched on his heels while the tenderfoot, with cautious movements that told of pain, got his clothes off and splashed some water on his body. No gunshot wounds, Barracoon observed, but marks of kicks and a couple that must have been made with a quirt. After a while, he asked, not inquisitively, but as one who has a right to know how matters stood, anybody looking for you? Foster rubbed dust from his clothes, being too full of pain to shake them. No, he said, but I am looking for somebody. Well, I ain't gonna help you, Bert informed him. Town's over that way, 2 miles, when you get ready to come. Cash the stuff when you leave. I'll pick it up. 3 days later, they met in the town marshal's office. They glanced at each other, but did not speak. This time, it was Bert Barracoon who was bruised, though not much. The marshal was just letting them out of the one-cell jail when Foster limped into the office. Nobody said anything until Barracoon, blinking and walking not quite steadily, had left. Foster saw him stop in front of the next building to speak to a girl. They walked away together, and it looked as if the young man were being scolded. The marshal cleared his throat. You wanted something, mister? Foster answered, 3 men set me afoot on the prairie. Is that an offense against the law around here? The marshal eased himself and his stomach into a chair and frowned judiciously. It ain't customary, he admitted. Who was they? Boss was a big man with black hair, dark eyes, and 2 gold teeth in front. The other two, I know, Liberty Valance and a couple of his boys. Just what's your complaint now? Foster began to understand that no help was going to come from the marshal. They rob you? The marshal asked. They didn't search me. Take your gun? I didn't have one. Steal your horse? Gave him a crack with the quirt, and he left. Saddle on him? No, I left it out there. The marshal shook his head. I can't see you got any legal complaint. Where was this? on a road in the woods by a creek, 2 days' walk from here. The marshal got to his feet. You don't even know what jurisdiction it was in. They knocked you around. Well, that can happen. Man gets in a fight. It happened to anybody. Foster said dryly, "Thanks a lot." The marshal stopped him as he reached the door. "There's a reward for Liberty Valance." "I haven't got a gun," Foster said. "Does he come here often?" "Nope. Nothing he'd want in Two Trees. Hard man to find." The marshal looked Foster up and down. "He won't come after you here." It was as if he had added Sonny. "Beat you up once, he won't come again for that." "And I," Foster realized, "am not man enough to go after him." "Fact is," Marshall added, "I can't think of any bait that would bring him in. Pretty quiet here." "Yes, sir." He put his thumbs in his suspenders and looked out the window, taking credit for the quietness. Bait, Foster thought. He went out thinking about it. For the first time in a couple of years, he had an ambition. Not a laudable one, but something to aim at. It was going to be the bait for Liberty Valance, and as far as he could be, the trap as well. At the Elite Cafe, he stood meekly in the doorway, hat in hand, like a man who expects and deserves to be refused anything he might ask for. Clearing his throat, he asked, "Could I work for a meal?" The girl, who was filling sugar bowls, looked up and pitied him. "Why, I should think so. Mr. Anderson?" She was the girl who had walked away with Barracoon, scolding him. The proprietor came from the kitchen, and Ransom Foster repeated his question, cringing, but with a suggestion of a sneer. "Go around back and split some wood," Anderson answered, turning back to the kitchen. "He could just as well eat first," the waitress suggested. "I'll dish up some stew to begin with." Rance ate fast, as if he expected the plate to be snatched away. He knew the girl glanced at him several times, and he hated her for it. He had not counted on anyone pitying him in his new role of sneering humility. But he knew he might as well get used to it. When she brought his pie, she said, "If you was looking for a job..." He forced himself to look at her suspiciously. "Yes. Well, you could try the Prairie Belle. I hear they need a swamper." Bert Barracoon, riding out to the river camp for his bedroll, hardly knew the man he met there. Rance Foster was haughty, condescending, and cringing all at once. He spoke with a faint sneer and stood as if he expected to be kicked. "I assume you'd be back for your belongings," he said. "I realize that you would change your mind." "I... Bear Coon snapping up his bedroll, looked blank. Never changed it, he disagreed. Just doing what I planned. I never gave you the bedroll. Course not. The new Rance Foster agreed with sneering humility. It's yours. You have every right to reclaim it. Bear Coon looked at him narrowly and hoisted the bedroll to sling it up behind his saddle. I should have left you for the buzzards, he remarked. Foster agreed with a smile that should have got him a fist in the teeth. Thank you, my friend, he said with no gratitude. Thank you for all your kindness, which I have done nothing to deserve and shall do nothing to repay. Bear Coon rode off, scowling, with the memory of his good deed irritating him like lice. The new Foster followed, far behind, on foot. Sometime in later life, Rance Foster thought of the several men he had been through the years. He did not admire any of them very much. He was by no means ashamed of the man he finally became, except that he owed too much to other people. One man he had been when he was young, a serious student, gullible and quick-tempered. Another man had been reckless and without a name. He went west with $2,000 of his own after a quarrel with the executor of his father's estate. That man did not last long. Liberty Valance had whipped him with a short whip and kicked him into unconsciousness for no reason except that Liberty, meeting him and knowing him for a tenderfoot, was able to do so. That man died on the prairie. After that, there was the man who set out to be the bait that would bring Liberty Valance to Two Trees. Rance Foster had never hated anyone before he met Liberty Valance, but Liberty was not the last man he learned to hate. He hated the man he himself had been while he waited to meet Liberty again. The swamper's job at the Prairie Bell was not disagreeable until Rance Foster made it so. When he swept floors, he was so obviously contemptuous of the work and of himself for doing it that other men saw him as contemptible. He watched the customers with a curled lip as if they were beneath him. But when a poker player threw a white chip on the floor, the swamper looked at him with half-veiled hatred and picked up the chip. They talked about him at the Prairie Bell because he could not be ignored. At the end of the first month, he bought a Colt 45 from a drunken cowboy who needed money worse than he needed two guns. After that, Rance went without part of his sleep in order to walk out 7 mornings a week to where his first camp had been and practice target shooting. The second time he overslept from exhaustion, Joe Mostyn of the Prairie Bell fired him. "Here's your pay," Joe growled and dropped the money on the floor. A week passed before he got another job. He ate his meals frugally at the Elite Cafe and let himself be seen stealing scraps off plates that other diners had left. Lillian, the older of the two waitresses, yelled her disgust, but Haley, who was young, pitied him. "Come to the back door when it's dark," she murmured, "and I'll give you a bite. There's plenty to spare." The second evening, he went to the back door. Bert Barracoon was there ahead of him. He said gently, "Haley's my girl." "No offense intended," Foster answered. "The young lady offered me food, and I have come to get it." "A dog eats where he can," young Barracoon drawled. Rance's muscles tensed and rage mounted in his throat, but he caught himself in time and shrugged. Bert said something then that scared him. "If you want it to get talked about, it's working fine. They're talking clean over in Dunbar. What do they do or say in Dunbar? Foster answered. Is nothing to me. It's where Liberty Valance hangs out, the other man said casually. In case you care. Rance almost confided then, but instead said stiffly, I do not quite appreciate your strange interest in my affairs. Barracoon pushed back his hat and scratched his head. I don't understand it myself, but leave my girl alone. As charming as Miss Haley may be, Rance told him, I am interested only in keeping my stomach full. Then why don't you work for a living? The clerk at Dowitt's quit this afternoon. Jake Dewitt hired him as a clerk because nobody else wanted the job. Read and write, do you? Dewitt asked. Work with figures? Foster drew himself up. Sir, whatever may be said against me, I believe I may lay claim to being a scholar. That much I claim, if nothing more. I have read law. Maybe the job ain't good enough for you, Dewitt suggested. Foster became humble again. Any job is good enough for me. I will also sweep the floor. You will also keep up the fire in the stove, Dewitt told him. 7 in the morning till 9 at night. Got a place to live? I sleep in the livery stable in return for keeping it shoveled out. Dewitt had intended to house his clerk in a small room over the store, but he changed his mind. Got a shed out back you can bunk in, he offered. You'll have to clean it out first. You just keep chickens there. There is one thing, Foster said. I want 2 half days off a week. Dewitt looked over the top of his spectacles. Now, what would you do with time off? Oh, never mind. You can have it. For less pay. I'll give you a discount on what you buy in the store. The only purchase Foster made consisted of 4 boxes of cartridges a week. In the store, he weighed salt pork as if it were low stuff, but himself still lower. Humbly measured lengths of dress goods for the women customers. He added vanity to his other unpleasantnesses and let customers discover him combing his hair admiringly before a small mirror. He let himself be seen reading a small black book, which aroused curiosity. It was while he worked at the store that he started Two Trees' first school. Haley was responsible for that. Handing him a plate heaped higher than other customers got at the cafe, she said gently, You're a learned man, they say, Mr. Foster. With Haley, he could no longer sneer or pretend humility, for Haley was herself humble, as well as gentle and kind. He protected himself from her by not speaking unless he had to. He asked, I have had advantages, Miss Haley, before fate brought me here. That book you read, she asked wistfully, what's it about? It was written by a man named Plato. It was written in Greek, he told her. She brought him a cup of coffee, hesitated for a moment, and then asked, You can read and write American, too, can't you? English, Miss Halley, he corrected. English is our mother tongue. I am quite familiar with English. She put her red hands on the cafe counter. Mr. Foster, she whispered, would you teach me to read? He was too startled to think of an answer she could not defeat. Bert wouldn't like it, he said. You're a grown woman, besides, wouldn't look right for you to be learning to read now. She shook her head. I can't learn any younger, she sighed. I always wanted to know how to read and write. She walked away toward the kitchen, and Rance Foster was stuck with an emotion he knew he could not afford. He was swept with pity. He called her back. Miss Halley, not you alone. People would talk about you, but if you brought Bert, Bert can read some. He don't care about it, but there's some kids in town. Her face was so light that Rance looked away. He still tried to escape. Won't you be ashamed learning with children? Well, I'll be proud to learn any way at all, she said. He had three little girls, two restless little boys, and Hallie in Two Trees' first school sessions. 1 hour each afternoon in DeWitt's storeroom. DeWitt did not dock his pay for the time spent, but he puzzled a great deal. So did the children's parents. The children themselves were puzzled at some of the things he read aloud, but they were patient. After all, lessons only lasted an hour. When you are older, you will understand this, he promised, not looking at Hallie. And then he read Shakespeare's sonnet that begins, No longer mourn for me when I am dead, than you shall hear the surly, sullen bell. And ends, Do not so much as my poor name rehearse, but lent your love even with my life decay, lest the wise world should look into your moan and mock you with me after I am gone. Hallie understood the warning, he knew. He read another sonnet, too. When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state. And carefully did not look up at her as he finished it. For thy sweet love remembered such wealth brings that I scorn to change my state with kings. Her earnestness in learning was distasteful to him. The anxious way she grasped a pencil and formed letters, the little gasp with which she always began to read aloud. Twice he made her cry, but she never missed a lesson. He wished he'd had a teacher for his own learning, but he could not trust anyone, and so he did his lessons alone. Bert Barracoon caught him at it one of those free afternoons when Foster, on a horse from the livery stable, had ridden miles out of town to a secluded spot. Rance Foster had an empty gun in his hand when Barracoon stepped out from behind a sandstone column and remarked, I've seen better. Foster whirled, and Barracoon added, I could have been somebody else, and your gun's empty. When I see somebody else, it won't be, Foster promised. If you'd asked me, Barracoon mused, I would have helped you. But you didn't want no helping. A man shouldn't be ashamed to ask somebody that knows better than him. His gun was suddenly in his hand, and five shots cracked his echoes around the skull-white sandstone pillars. Half an inch above each of five cards that Rance had tacked to a dead tree. At the length of a man's waist, a splintered hole appeared in the wood. Didn't want to spoil your targets, Barracoon explained. I'm not ashamed to ask you, Foster told him angrily. Since you know so much, I shoot straight but slow. I'm asking you now. Barracoon, with a gold in his gun, shook his head. It's kind of late for that. I came out to tell you that Liberty Valance is in town. He's interested in the dude that anybody can kick around. This here tenderfoot that boasts how he can read Greek. Well, said Foster softly, well. So the time has come. Don't figure you're riding into town with me, Bert warned him. You're coming all by yourself. Rance rode into town with his gun belt buckled on. Always before, he had carried it wrapped in a slicker. In town, he allowed himself the luxury of one last vanity. He went to the barber shop, neither sneering nor cringing, and said sharply, Cut my hair short. Barber was nervous. And he worked understandably fast. Thought you was partial to that long wavy hair yarn, he asked. I don't know why you thought so, Foster said coldly. Out in the street again, he realized that he did not know how to go about the job. He did not know where Liberty Valance was, and he was determined not to be caught like a rat. He intended to look for Liberty. Joe Mostyn's right-hand man was lounging at the door of the Prairie Belle. He moved over to bar the way. Not in there, Foster, he said gently. It was the first time in months that Rance Foster had heard another man address him respectfully. His presence was recognized as a menace to the fixtures of the Prairie Belle. When I die, sometime today, he thought, They won't say I was a coward. They may say I was a damn fool, but I won't care by that time. Where is he? Rance asked. I couldn't tell you that, the man said apologetically. I'm young and healthy, and where he is none of my business. Joe'd be obliged if you'd stay out of the bar. That's all. Rance looked across towards DeWitt's store. The padlock was on the door. He glanced north towards the marshal's office. That's closed, too, the saloon man told him courteously. Marshall was called out of town an hour ago. Rance threw back his head and laughed. The sound echoed back from the false-fronted buildings across the street. There was nobody walking in the streets. There was not even any horses tied to the hitching racks. Send Liberty word, he ordered in the tone of one who has a right to command. Tell him the tenderfoot wants to see him again. The saloon man cleared his throat. Guess it won't be necessary. That's him coming down at the end of the street, wouldn't you say? Rance looked, knowing the saloon man was watching him curiously. I'd say it is, he agreed. Yes, I'd say that was Liberty Valance. I'll be going inside now, the other man remarked apologetically. Well, take care of yourself. He was gone without a sound. This is the classic situation, Rance realized. Two enemies walking to meet each other along the dusty, waiting street of a western town. What reasons other men have had, I will never know. There are so many things I have never learned, and now there's no time left. He was an actor who knew the end of the scene but had forgotten the lines and never knew the cue for them. One of us ought to say something, he realized. I thought I've planned this all out in advance, but all I ever saw was the end of it. Liberty Valance, burly and broad-shouldered, walked stiff-legged with his elbows bent. And he's close enough for me to see whether he's smiling, Rance Foster thought. Somebody's got to speak. He looked into his own mind and realized this man is afraid, this Ransom Foster, but nobody else knows it. He walks and is afraid, but he is no coward. Let them remember that. Let Hallie remember that. Liberty Valance gave the cue. Looking for me? He called between his teeth. He was grinning. Rance was almost grateful to him. It was as if Liberty had said, the time is now. I owe you something, Rance answered. I want to pay my debt. Liberty's hands flashed with his own. The gun in Foster's hand exploded, and so did the world, the whole world. Two shots to my one, he thought, his last thought for a while. He looked up at a strange, unsteady ceiling and a face that wavered like a reflection in water. The bed beneath him swung even after he closed his eyes. Far away, somebody said, shove some more cloth in the wound. It slows the bleeding. He knew with certain agony where the wound was, in his right shoulder. When they touched it, he heard himself cry out. The face that wavered above him was a new one, Bert Barracoon's. He's dead, Barracoon said. Foster answered from far away. I am not, Barracoon said. I didn't mean you. Rance turned his head away from the pain, and the face that had shimmered above him before was Hallie's, white and big-eyed. She put a hesitant hand on his, and he was annoyed to see that hers was trembling. Are you shaking? He asked, because there's blood on my hands? No, she answered. It's because they might have been getting cold. He was aware then that other people were in the room They stirred and moved aside as the doctor entered. "Maybe you're going to keep that arm," doctor told him at last, "but it's never going to be much use to you." The trial was held 3 weeks after the shooting in the hotel room where Rance lay in bed. The charge was disturbing the peace. He pleaded guilty and was fined $10. When the others had gone, he told Bert Barracoon, "There was a reward, I heard. That would pay the doctor and the hotel." "You ain't going to collect it," Bert informed him. "It'd make you too big for your britches." Barracoon sat looking at him for a moment and then remarked, "You didn't kill Liberty." Foster frowned. "They buried him." "Liberty fired once. You fired once and missed." "I fired once, and I don't generally miss. I ain't going to collect the reward neither. Hallie don't hold with violence." Foster said thoughtfully, "That was all I had to be proud of." "You faced him," Barracoon said. "You went to meet him. If you got to be proud of something, you can remember that. It's a fact. You ain't got much else." Rance looked at him with narrowed eyes. "Bert, are you a friend of mine?" Bert smiled without humor. "You know I ain't. I picked you up off the prairie, but I do that for the lowest scum that crawls." "I wish I hadn't." Then why?" Bert looked at the toe of his boot. "Hallie likes you. I'm a friend of Hallie's. That's all I'll ever be, long as you're around." Rance said, "Then I shot Liberty Valance?" That was the nearest he'd ever dare come to saying thank you. And that was when Bert Barracoon started being his conscience, his nemesis, his lifelong enemy, and the man who had made him great. "Would she be happy living back east?" Foster asked. "There's money waiting for me there if I go back." Bert answered, "What do you think?" He stood up and stretched. "You got quite a problem, ain't you? You could solve it easily by just going back alone. There ain't much of a man can do here with a crippled arm." He went out and shut the door behind him. There's always a way out, Foster thought, if a man wants to take it. Bert had been his way out when he met Liberty on the street of Two Trees. To go home was the way out of this. "I learned to live without pride," he told himself. "I could learn to forget about Hallie." When she came, between the dinner dishes and setting tables for supper at the cafe, he told her. She did not cry. Sitting in the chair beside his bed, she winced and jerked one hand to protest when he said, "I got 20 minutes. I'll be done before then."
"You will be?"
"Yeah." "Okay." Oh, I'm sorry. "No. I've got 20 minutes for the story." "Oops. Where are we?" What a rude guy. Who was that? Okay. When she came between the dinner dishes and settling the tables for supper at the cafe, he told her. She did not cry. Sitting in the chair beside his bed, she winced and jerked one hand in protest when he said, "As soon as I can travel, I'm going back where I came from." She did not argue. She said only, "I wish you good luck, Ransom. Bert and me, we'll look after you long as you stay and remember you after you're gone." "How will you remember me?" he demanded harshly. As his student, she had been humbled. But as a woman, she'd had her pride. "Don't ask that," she said, and got up from the chair. "Hallie? Hallie!" he pleaded. "How can I stay? How can I earn a living?" She said indignantly, as if someone else had insulted him. "Rance Foster, I just guess you could do anything you wanted to." "Hallie, sit down," he said gently. He never really wanted to be outstanding. He had two aims in his life, to make Hallie happy and to keep Bert Barracone out of trouble. He defended Bert on charges ranging from drunkenness to stealing cattle, and Bert served time twice. Rance Foster did not want to run for judge, but Bert remarked, "I think Hallie would be kind of like it if you was his honor." Hallie was pleased but not surprised when he was elected. Rance was surprised but not pleased. He was not eager to run for the legislature. That was after the territory became a state, but there was Bert Barracone in the background, never urging, never advising, but watching with half-closed, bloodshot eyes. Bert Barracone, who never amounted to anything, but never intruded, was a living, silent reminder of three debts: a hatful of water under the cottonwoods, gunfire in a dusty street, and Hallie, quietly sewing beside a lamp in the parlor. And the Fosters had four sons. All the things the opposition said about Rance Foster when he ran for the state legislature were true, except one. He had been a lowly swamper in a frontier saloon. He had been a deadbeat, accepting handouts at the alley entrance of a cafe. He had been despicable and despised. But the accusation that lost him the election was false. He had not killed Liberty Valance. He never served in the state legislature. When there was talk of his running for governor, he refused. Andy Strong, who knew politics, tried to persuade him. "That shootin' will get around that. We'll get around that shootin'. The Honorable Ransom Foster walked down a street in broad daylight to meet an enemy of society. Shot him down in a fair fight of necessity, the way you'd shoot a mad dog. But Liberty Valance could shoot back, and he did. Rance Foster carries the mark of that encounter today in a crippled right arm. He's still paying the price for protecting law-abiding citizens. And he was the first teacher west to Rosy Buttes. He served without pay. You come a long way, Rance. You're going further." "A long way," Foster agreed, "for a man who never wanted to go anywhere. I don't want to be governor." When Handy had gone, Bert Barracone sagged in. Unwashed, unshaven, he sat down stiffly. At the age of 50, he was an old man, an unwanted relic of the frontier that was gone, a legacy to more civilized times that had no places for him. He filled his pipe deliberately. After a while, he remarked, "The other side's going to say you ain't fitting to be governor because your wife ain't fancy enough. They're going to say Hallie didn't even learn to read till she was grown up." Rance was on his feet, white with fury. "Then I'm going to win this election if it kills me." "I don't reckon it'll kill you," Bert drawled. "Liberty Valance couldn't." "I could have gotten rid of the weight of that affair long ago," Rance reminded him, "by telling the truth." "You could yet," Bert answered. "Why don't you?" Rance said bitterly, "Because I owe you too much. I don't think Hallie wants to be the governor's lady. She's shy. Hallie don't never want nothing for herself. She wants things for you. The way I feel, I wouldn't mourn at your funeral. But what Hallie wants, I'm going to try and see she gets." "So am I," Rance promised grimly. "Then I don't mind telling you," Bert admitted, "that it was me reminded the opposition to dig up that matter of how she couldn't read." As the senator and his wife rode out to the airport after old Bert Barracone's barren funeral, Hallie sighed. "Bert never had much of anything. I guess he never wanted much." "He wanted you to be happy," Rance Foster thought. "And he did the best he knew how." I wonder where those prickly pear blossoms came from," he mused. Hallie looked up at him, smiling. "From me." We've been reading the original short story that inspired the movie The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, one of the great Western writers, Dorothy Johnson. If you ever get a chance, look up her short story, Lost Sister. Let's see here. Well, you're listening to Gremlin Time. Let's see if I can drag... I want to try and find a copy of that song about Liberty Valance. Let's see if I can find that before the top of the hour.
Them all. The man who shot Liberty. Shenandoah River on a sunny Sunday afternoon. Just me and my baby in a rowboat made for two. And she asked me, how far do you think Richmond could be? Said, honey, it doesn't matter now. Oh, we could float forever, forever you'd be my sweet little fish on a way out to sea. You know I've had other lovers, oh, but none could compare to you. Oh, you've never been afraid to go sailing away on the Shenandoah River. Doesn't matter now. Oh, we could float forever, forever you'd be my sweet little fish on a way out to sea. Well, you know I've had other lovers, yeah, but none could compare to you. For you've never been afraid to go sailing away on the Shenandoah River. On the Shenandoah River. But I can't keep my mind on the shore. When I lay down at night, would you to Nazareth? I was feeling by the happiest day.
I think we got one of these DARN computers here. I don't know how this thing is working right. We're just gonna play something out here on Gremlin Time. Stay tuned for the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next month on Gremlin Time. Remember, renew or become a new member of KBOO or renew your membership.
Well, into Nazareth, I was feeling by the happiest day. Just need some place where I can mountain high. Well, I saw old Karma and the devil. They were walking side to side. I said, hey, Karma, come on, let's you and I, let's go downtown.
KBOO Community Radio turns 45 this year, and our first 2013 membership drive starts on the 21st. Help make reaching our $99,000 fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matches are really great motivators to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to offer a match or have any questions. Or call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your spring drive matching gift today.
Stay tuned for the Tiki Cha Cha Club.
Ole, ole, it's show time!
In the tiki 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 room, in the tiki 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 room,
all the birds sing word and the flowers croon.
In the tiki 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 room,
welcome to our tropical hideaway, you lucky people, you. If we weren't in the show starting right away, we'd think the audience too.
All together in the tiki 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 room, in the tiki 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 room,
all the birds sing word and the flowers croon.
In the tiki 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 room.
Bird of paradise is an elegant bird. It likes to be seen and it loves to be heard. Most little birdies will fly away, but the tiki room birds are here every day.
In the tiki 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 room, in the tiki 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 room,
all the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
In the tiki 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 room,
a little louder.
In the tiki 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 room, in the tiki 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 room, all the birds sing words and the flowers croon. In the tiki tiki
taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you. This is the Tiki Cha Cha Club, where the Cocktail Nation meets Exotica at the corner of Kalakaua Boulevard and Bourbon Street in a little Spanish village, a small discotheque on the Isle of Capri.